Hello and welcome to What Scream, the horror movie podcast where I, your host, Egraine, chats with a special guest every week about horror films. And we talk about two films that have to do with a particular subject that I've previously randomly chosen. This week is all about British-ish folk horror. I'm going to add on the ish because that is something I will bring up with my discussion with my guest. But yes, British-ish folk horror. I have previously said I don't really like folk horror, but I am coming around. Since doing this podcast, I'm coming around. I just don't like the 1970s folk horror, like the Unholy Trilogy. Definitely don't like The Wicker Man. But I'm coming around to modern folk horror. I'm really enjoying what is coming out of Ireland and Britain at the moment. So yes, my guest this week is author Josh Millican. And together we are discussing two films. We are talking about A Dark Song from 2016, which is an Irish-British film. So that's why I'm like British-ish, directed and written by Liam Gavin. And we are also talking about In the Earth, the 2021 folk horror directed by Ben Wheatley. So enjoy this chat about British-ish folk horror with Josh Millican. So I would like to welcome to What a Scream my very special guest for this episode. It's Joshua Millican. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Egraine?
I'm good. Thank you. I've had some really nice food and a glass of wine, so I'm all chilled out, especially after watching one of the films that your choice of film today. I just finished watching it and I was like, definitely needed that glass of wine to chill out after that film.
It's intense for sure.
Definitely. So before we get onto that then, would you like to introduce yourself and let listeners know who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm Joshua Millican. If you've already heard of me, it's probably because I was the editor-in-chief at Dread Central for a couple of years, and I was at the site for about 4 or 5 years total. It's where I came up. And these days, I'm an author. My first novel came out almost a year ago, and the follow-up to that is coming out this June, in just a few days, actually, on June 9th. So I'm very excited about that. I have another book that came out recently, which is a collection of the interviews I did over my years at Dread Central. And I also, later this year, have a novelization of a cult film from the 1980s. Coming out. So it's a big year for me. As for, you know, who I am and what I do, I'm still trying to kind of figure it all out. I just like to say I'm a horror expert and a writer and a horror fan, and, you know, just trying to make my way in this crazy world.
Aren't we all?
I guess.
So how did you get into horror, and do you remember what the very first horror film was you ever saw?
Well, I remember the summer of 1986 because I was just a tiny terror. But that was the summer that both Aliens and The Fly came out. And I saw both of them in theaters. I mean, looking back, I kind of don't know how, because they're rated R, but I don't remember anyone batting an eyelash about selling me a ticket and me just going on in and sitting down. You know, they're very different horror movies. You have action, blockbuster horror, and then you have deeply disturbing body horror. But I loved them both for different reasons. And from then on, I was hooked. And I grew up in the video store era, where I got to walk up and down the horror aisle just looking at that crazy box art. And I was a Fangoria fan back in the day when it was still just this little stapled thing that stunk of paper pulp. And, you know, just always been a horror fan. I think I got back into it during the streaming era, because Netflix back in the day in the mid-2000s had everything for a while. You know, not just the mainstream stuff, but foreign films and indie films that never made it into theaters. And it was a renaissance for me as a horror connoisseur. And, you know, that's my journey through horror.
And is your favorite era the 80s? Because that was like the era that you were going to see horror
You
in
know, I
cinema.
would say no, actually. I think my favorite era is the modern era. You know, I think that entertainment, well, journalism is such a noble profession. You know, you're on the tip of the spearhead of history. You know, you're just, you know, gathering the information and putting it out there. Entertainment journalists, you know, aren't as noble as, you know, wartime correspondents, but at the same time, you know, I think there's something noble to it as well. And I think a really good entertainment journalist celebrates the accomplishments of filmmakers and you know, artists in general. So I just love trying to stay as up to date on, as possible on everything that comes out. And I feel like the era that I'm in is kind of the most exciting for horror because it's history unfolding.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there that we are in such an exciting era of horror where it feels like everything that's come before is now amalgamating with everything that is currently and is to come. And there's
Horror's
so many,
never been
yeah, like there's so many
this
different
big.
types of
That
filmmakers.
was
It's just, it's crazy.
great. Yeah, so sorry, I didn't mean to talk over
No,
you
it's
there.
okay.
In mind. Yeah, horror's never been so big. You know, when I started blogging about horror 10 years ago, it was still something I had to defend, you know, and I feel like I finally don't have to do that anymore because everyone knows that horror is high art, you know, and low art and everything in between. Just, you know, and horror conventions are so popular right now. You don't have drama conventions. You don't have, you know, I guess you do have sci-fi conventions, but horror is rare in that there's a community around it. And it seems to call out to the misfits, you know, the people who never fit in. And it's just a wonderful wonderland for those who are willing to explore the darker avenues of human existence.
Yeah, I've always said that horror is so unique because of its tradition that, you know, what other genre apart from sci-fi would you get where it's passed down through generations and generations, where you've got parents or grandparents introducing the younger generations to horror films, and then they go on to introduce younger generations. And it's almost, funnily enough, segueing into our theme for this week, it's almost a folkloric tradition. Okay, so let's segue then into our episode theme, which is British folklore. So what do you know about British folklore? Are you a fan of it?
Well, you know, I guess I don't know a ton about it. You know, I don't have the geographical and cultural connection that someone who's from the United Kingdom might have. But, you know, there's something about it that is very intriguing and has since sort of crossed over. I love the, you know, the secret being kept by a group on an isolated island or in a village. You know, I love the idea of rituals and, you know, paganism intruding into this sort of a Judeo-Christian society. You know, it seems kind of like a small subgenre. So it's interesting to be on a show that's all about it because yeah, it's especially from my perspective as an American from California, it's a world away from me. But that makes it really interesting too because it's you know, it's something so far removed from my own personal experience that it does kind of make it easier to immerse myself.
Yeah, I was never a fan of British folk horror because in my head it was just like the Wicker Man. I hate the Wicker Man.
Well,
But I
that's
found,
me. That's the one that instantly pops into
I
everyone's head.
know, yeah. Like when people say British folk, even just folk horror, people are like the Wicker Man. But I do like this new era of folk horror, especially ones from Britain and here in Ireland as well. I just think it's really interesting, and I think it's because, perhaps because when you look back at the Wicker Man, it's very dated now, and I can't really relate to it. Whereas like the newfound kind of folk horror that's coming out, I really kind of relate to it, and yeah, I'm quite excited to see what the genre kind of becomes. So let's start off then with your film, your choice of film. Would you like to introduce it and give a synopsis, please?
Yeah, sure. The film I chose to discuss is A Dark Song.
I've done this three times. Once it worked, twice it didn't.
I have to hear his voice again.
This is your last chance to back out.
Seal it.
You do know what we're taking on.
A shifting consciousness. Becoming one with the ceremony. Pure.
And may all my transgressions be washed like transgressions.
This is real stuff we're playing with. Real angels, real demons.
Make me choose to feel. How do we know that it started?
You'll see it soon enough.
May my light be here now. Be protecting me.
Drink it!
Just remember who's paying for this.
Do you know the ritual?
No.
You agreed to do whatever I said.
Sorry.
Sorry, Mr. Solomon.
Sorry, Mr. Solomon.
Came out in 2016. A woman who is suffering the loss of her son, deeply traumatized, turns to an occultist to try to make a connection beyond the grave. Although her ultimate motivations are opaque, they're first hidden. They are revealed, but ultimately I think that the experience changes her, and what she gets is not what she went into it hoping for, but it was what she needed. Ultimately, it's a very emotional horror. It's a horror drama. And for me, it was just such an intensely realistic look at magic and ritual that it almost played out like a documentary in the first act or two. And I think it barely fits into the folk horror category, but it makes it because it has the element of pre-Christian magic. It has the element of isolation in a rural setting, which I think is always really key to folk horror. And the experience is really profound. You talked about how, you know, the Wicker Man is so dated. It's hard to look at it and not kind of chuckle at everything that's going on. This kind of takes, I think the seriousness that film was made with, Wicker Man, talking about that, it gives the integrity back to folk horror. And shows it as something that it can be deeply personal, psychological, and emotional. So it's a really great film, and I like talking about how it's kind of an oddball of folk horror, yet still kind of manages to fit the subgenre.
Yeah, so this film it's an Irish and UK production. Liam Gavin is Irish, and it was shot actually down the road from me, which is really funny.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was literally shot down the road. but it's set in Britain, in Wales. For me personally, because coming at it from an Irish point of view, and being like the writer and director's Irish, I was really interested as to why it was set in Wales and not like, and used British actors and not being like, this is Irish. But I could kind of see the Irishness in it, that he is talking about how women and children are usually the victim of religion, whether it's like pagan or Christian. Did you pick up on that at all? Or is that me just being like, well, I'm from Catholic Ireland, and of course all religion abuses children and women.
No, but that is really interesting. And, you know, I'm picking up on a thread in your comment, which is that one of the most interesting parts of this story is the story that we never hear. And that is what happened to her son.
Yeah.
All we know is that he was murdered by a cult in some kind of ritual. I mean, it's almost like this film is asking for a prequel, but you would never expect a prequel from this kind of film. And you mentioned, you know, religion abusing women and children. So obviously you caught that too. What happened to her little boy, you know? And I love that there's that mystery. And it's not like they left it out. It just wasn't in this story. Mm-hmm. But that mystery still exists. It's like you have a story framed in a mystery that we still just wonder about. And I love your perspective of it. And I'm really glad that I'm not the only one who is like, the kid is a much more important, the kid is an important character, even though he's dead and we never see him. We hear a voice, but he is, the third most important character in this film, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a real stark portrayal of grief, as well as, you know, how far a mother would go to, you know, attempt to exact some sort of vengeance, some sort of payback for the death of her child. And I think Catherine Walker, who plays Sophia, was just amazing at, you know, in too many horrors, maybe this is me just being really heartless, we see the grieving mother as, and I'm going to put in quotation marks, hysterical, where mm-hmm. she's so calculated and she's so like, she knows what she wants and she knows what to do to get it. And I really related to her in that way, because I'm a very vengeful person. So I, you know, God forbid anything happens, I assume that I would be quite cold and calculated. What did you think of Catherine Walker's performance?
Amazing. And, you know, she and Stephen Oram, you know, were amazing. And this is something that I've noticed more as I watch more and more horror and you know, horror of the 21st century. You know, you're much more likely to believe in something supernatural if you believe the characters, mm-hmm. you know, and holding off on introducing supernatural elements until an act three is also a really great way to encourage us to take this to heart. You know, the leads in this are so real. You know, Stephen Orr, I mean, he's a comic actor in some of the other stuff I've seen him in, but there's nothing funny about him here. You know, he's unlike anything I've seen him in before. And when you have these two characters who are both so damaged and real, and when you take the time to set up this relationship, which is, you know, complex and difficult to watch at times, and you do this, you create a bond with the audience before you introduce the supernatural element. You know, it's so much easier to accept it. You know, I'm like, yes, okay, I'm not questioning any of this, because I didn't question who these people were, their motivations, their relationships. And they committed to it and I committed to them. So now I'm committed to this supernatural experience.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I really appreciate about the character of Solomon is that they didn't make him this like mystical magic man. You know, he's some alcoholic in a tracksuit. I mean, he was the true horror of the story. Mm-hmm. The way he abuses her, the way he sexually assaults her in one scene. That was the real horror, is how far she was willing to trust him as well. There's one scene where he says, because she said, I want to talk to my dead child. And then he's like, you're lying to me. And it turns out she actually wants vengeance on her children's killer. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you've got to be reborn. So they go to the bathroom. He fills up the bath and he says, I've got to duck you under, basically a baptism. And just even before he starts to hold her under, just that scene made me so nervous, because the amount of trust she's putting in him. And yeah, that just freaked me out a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely the one in the film. He does fill that villain role. It's interesting you say that, because I never thought of him as a villain, because he's kind of her partner in this, but he certainly is. You know, I had you know, one of my takes on it all, though, you know, he does abuse her, but, you know, the rituals themselves are painful, requiring a physical commitment, you know, an endurance of cold, uncomfortable, holding uncomfortable positions. It's almost like pain was an integral element of the ritual, and, you know, kind of like fostering her ability to accept abuse and pain and discomfort. Was it necessary to get her to the point of being able to make that spiritual connection? I'm kind of asking you, Would she have gotten there without his abuse?
No, I guess not. Yeah, I guess being put into that uncomfortable position as a whole and that pain and that humiliation, it's kind of bringing you back down to base emotions, to base feelings, which I guess when we look at this film as a whole, I'm going to assume it's a commentary on grief and the fact that to get to where we want to be when we're experiencing grief, we do have to go through all those stages, you know, humiliation, anger, pain, etc., etc. So yeah, I mean, he is the villain, but he is also an enzyme, I guess, when it comes to her reaching the place that she wants to reach.
Right. What a complicated story, you know, where you have these two characters where neither one of them fits the traditional protagonist, antagonist. And, you know, obviously this conversation is strictly within the confines of a horror movie. You know, the kind of abuse portrayed is inexcusable. I'm simply talking about it in terms of this art form, and I certainly don't want to seem as though I'm making an excuse for the very toxic, inexcusable behaviors that are portrayed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you could look at it and be, you know, it could be that old adage, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And right. That, you know, coming from someone who was in an abusive relationship, if I hadn't have gone through that abusive relationship, would I be the person I am today, which is a lot stronger, a lot happier, a lot more accepting, and, you know, perhaps a better mother and now a better wife, you know? So it does raise that question where you're like, does she have to go through that abuse to become the person she is? One thing that kind of bothers me about this film is the end. I don't know how Solomon dies, and he, at that point, he says, I think this is the ritual work, and it's your guardian angel getting me back for the pain I've caused you. And he dies, and she decides to leave, even though he said to her, you cannot leave. If you leave, bad things will happen. She tries to leave. She ends back up at the mansion, and hell and these demons come out. And then we get this figure of the guardian angel. What did you think of that end sequence? Did it do anything for you?
Yeah, I mean, I was really struck by the imagery of it. You know, again, you know, it's so outside my world, you know, as an American and a Californian and an agnostic. But I was so committed to the ride of it all that when this beautiful angel arrived, I love when filmmakers are brave and take risks. And it was really unexpected. But like we were talking about before, I had committed to this journey because I had committed to the characters, because the story and the actors and the filmmakers all committed. You know, I was in it. So when it happened, I was all, okay, there we go. You know, and you're talking about the end. You know, I often think about the very end where she has the catharsis. Or the revelation that she was hoping for, and you see her kind of smiling and driving off, how do we know she isn't just going to end up right back there again? Yeah. You know, and I wonder if she will, because he was very clear about the fact that if you leave before everything's done, you'll be here forever.
Yes.
So it's a happy ending, or is it? I mean, we don't see what happens when she turns around the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether she's has a new life and she's freed, or whether she's now going to be in this eternal cycle.
I will be honest. The first time I saw this film, I was like, what is going on? This massive, massive angel appears. Like, I could get behind.
He's huge.
I could get behind the demons. I was like, yep, I'm all for the demons. And then this massive angel appears. And I was like, I think it's just the anti-Catholic in me. I was like, no, why did we have to go? Why did we have to go for that kind of angel? Why couldn't it have been like the several eyeballs and, you know, kind of angels? But the second time round, I was a little bit more accepting of it. I was like, okay, maybe this is her perception of what her guardian angel is. This is how she imagines it. This is how it's projected.
That's what gave her that sense of safety and protection.
Yeah, exactly. So I could kind of get a little bit behind it. And it turns out that the power to forgive is what she actually needed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I guess is a, you know, it's what we all kind of need. I was saying I was quite a vengeful person. And you get to that point where you're like, is this eating me up more than, enacting the vengeance? So I guess it was a nice little morality tale at the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
So would you recommend A Dark Song to horror fans?
Absolutely. I clearly connected with this film. I love brave, bold filmmaking. I love things that take us outside of our comfort zone. And I love things that show us something we've never seen before. And I think A Dark Song does all of those things. It's a very unique film, whether we're talking about horror or the folk horror subgenre.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're into truly emotional, brutal, emotion. I said that twice, didn't I?
Super emotional.
It's emotional horror. You know, it is emotionally horrifying, and there is a catharsis, like you said, and I think ultimately you come out of it feeling accomplished.
Yeah, I definitely would recommend it. This is my second time watching it, and I there's always that thing that sometimes when you rewatch something, especially if it is with a purpose, to say like a podcast or an article, and you're like, oh, you know, I'm bored. Whereas I found it very rewatchable, and I'd probably rewatch it again. And like you said, brutally emotional, I think is an amazing examination of a stage of grief that is very relatable. And yeah, I think the two leads are absolutely fantastic in it. They really tap into the base kind of emotions and the base instincts of people. I'm really excited to see what else Liam Gavin comes up with.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, let's move on to my choice of film then.
Yes.
I went with Ben Wheatley's In the Earth from 2021.
Tell me his story. These are his memories. Can you feel him now? In the earth.
No, I don't know what you mean.
I think you do.
So what are you working on?
Researching ways of making crops more efficient.
Funny place to study crops in a forest.
We had to send a rescue party in to get a group out a couple of months ago. They got lost.
Why didn't they use GPRS?
There's no phone reception in there. People get a bit funny in the woods sometimes.
You worried she's gonna get you?
Yeah, who is it?
It's a local folk tale. She's the spirit of the woods. Wake up. Something's there.
It sets itself in a pandemic world, which was kind of creepy because when I went to see this, it was my first cinema outing back after lockdown. So it felt very, very real. So we see Martin, who is a scientist, and he's going to this outpost in the forest to look for one of his colleagues. And himself and Alma, who is a kind of a park ranger, they go into the forest to try and find her. And they begin to experience or to come across very strange thing. It's almost a bit Blair Witchy at one point. They come across a tent where a family seems to have disappeared or been kidnapped. Martin steps on a piece of flint and hurts his foot. And then they are introduced to Zach, who is this wild man living in the woods. And he creates this photographic art that is to appease a deity in the woods. And then they come across the colleague that Martin was attempting to find. And she is also trying to understand this deity, but from a scientific point of view. And it all has to do with these mushroom spores called, now I'm going to attempt to pronounce it, mycorrhiza. And it's all about light and sound. And yeah, it gets a bit, as my friend said, it gets a bit Glastonbury Music Festival on acid. So what did you think of In the Earth?
It was wild. You know, certainly a surreal film. I really like drug horror. I really like psychedelic horror. And it had those elements. You know, I think I was surprised that it was very different from anything else. Well, it was and it wasn't. You know, it was very different from Kill List, but, yeah. You know, it was super trippy, like A Field in England, mm-hmm. but nothing like A Field in England. Wheatley's a really diverse filmmaker. So I was just willing to follow him wherever this went. I like the spore horror aspect of it, which is kind of like a hot subgenre right now with The Last of Us and things like that. But this was a more grounded, philosophical take on the idea. And it's a bit of a head scratcher. It's hard to walk away going like, oh, okay, I understand exactly what happened there. And it takes a little bit of commitment. You know, there's no hand holding in a film like this. You know, it's going to take you on the same experience that the protagonist is on. And it's really not going to fill in any gaps beyond what our protagonist experiences. You know, we essentially are walking hand in hand with this guy, and his experience is our experience. And yeah, it was a trip. You know, like you mentioned as well, you know, this came out during the height of the pandemic, and it seemed almost like a reaction to the pandemic, but I think it was just coincidental. At the same time, it does transcend from folk horror into pandemic horror, which will be its own, you know, tiny micro subgenre. You know, when we look at films that came out either during or inspired by, you know, the turn of the decade here. So it's kind of a long answer of saying, yeah, it definitely had an effect on me. I'd recommend it. I guess we'll get to that later. But, you know, yeah, it's a trip. I can't wait to hear you talk more about it.
So as I said, I went to see it at the cinema. And for me, it was whether it was just because I'd been out of the cinema for so long, for like 2 years, and it just felt like such a visual and aural assault. And I, like you said, we go on this journey and it feels like we're in it. And it feels like I was on that drug trip. And I love films that immerse you that much that it's almost like an art installation rather than just a movie. But I was kind of worried. This was my second watch of it. And the reason I haven't watched it since then is because I was worried that it wouldn't have the same effect watching it at home. Because, you know, I don't have an amazing sound system or, you know, a massive high-def TV. So I was kind of worried it wouldn't translate well to home viewing. But I found it just as like assaulting on my senses. There is, you know, especially when we're doing like the flashes of images and the lights, I had to be like, okay, I have to look away now because this is going to trigger a migraine, or it's going to, like, you know, I'm getting a little bit freaked out here. So I loved that it did translate really well. And I love this film for the body horror, because there's a bit of feet trauma. And I don't mm-hmm. know about anyone, but anytime I see foot trauma, I'm like, and I also liked the theme of kind of art versus science, or faith versus science. So we've got Zach, the wild man, who is a photography, and he's worshiping this deity through his art, and he's obsessed. And the scientist Olivia, she is a scientist who is also obsessed, and they're basically after the same thing, but through different mediums, but they feel kind of odds at each other. I don't know if you picked up on that theme. What was your perspective on that?
No, I didn't, but that makes me want to go back and re-examine. Clearly, yeah, they did represent the right brain versus the left brain approach to something intangible. The truth lies where? Somewhere in the middle. So you have to achieve some sort of, you know, hemisync in order to truly comprehend the situation. I really like your view.
Yeah. What did you think? So they introduce this, I can't remember that, this kind of like entity. It's like an entity of the forest. Do you think that was well used, or do you think it was slightly pushed aside?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I try not to offer notes, you know, when I see a film, you know, I just try to ask myself, what was the filmmaker's intention? Mm-hmm. I think I definitely would have liked to have gone down that avenue a little bit more, because I think that that's very interesting. You know, it also just sets the mood, and it just hints at a bigger world. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the horror fan in me, the creature fan in me would have liked more. But, you know, the artistic conversationalist in me just has to ask, you know, what were Wheatley's intentions? And I think it was just to allow for the possibility of even more out there, and to kind of, you know, inspire our own imaginations without committing, you know, committing too much in a film this cerebral and this psychedelic could have backfired. So I can see why he took that approach.
Yeah, same. I mean, probably exactly like yourself, the little kind of like monster kid in me wanted a full on, you know, a bit of a monster.
Yeah.
But I do like the way he was almost like, well, let's put this kind of scientific explanation-ish, but we'll also keep, you know, like the traditional worship sense with Zach. But yeah, I think I would have liked a full-on creature, but that's just personal preference,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, monsters are awesome, right?
Yeah, especially wooded, kind of almost like a deer-headed Wendigo kind of monsters.
Oh,
yeah, I quite enjoy them. What did you think of the performances? I absolutely loved Reese Shearsmith as Zach. I thought he was fantastic in this. I absolutely adore Reese Shearsmith. As well as I really love Alora Tortilla as Alma in this.
I think everyone did a great job, and it was a really diverse ensemble. And again, you know, like we were talking about with the Dark Song, you know, great actors are so important, you know, because if they don't believe it, if they can't convince themselves, then they can't convince us. And with a story as bizarre as In the Earth, you need characters you can believe in, that you can relate to, you know. And you know, the protagonist is really grounded. It's really easy to walk in his shoes, and these people we meet along the way are kind of archetypes, you know, but their performances are so convincing that you just accept them as real, and you're willing to take them at their word, at least believe that they believe what they're saying, you know. So yeah, everyone's performance was spectacular.
Yeah, I particularly liked Alma. I just think she was just so cool, you know. She was such a straight talking, like, you know, okay, I'll say she was kind of a bit like Final Girl, you know. She had that Final Girl energy about her. I quite enjoyed
absolutely.
One thing that stuck out to me was the lighting and the color theory used in this film. I'm a massive fan of color theory in film, and just the red and the greens in this was just amazing, especially when the scenes with Zach, it's a red background and the stars are lit in green, which for obviously listeners to this podcast can't see, but you've got a red and green vibe going on, so it's very apt for talking about this film. What did you think of the lighting? Did it strike you at all?
The lighting was, yeah, it was phenomenal. Obviously, I have my own little fascination with lighting and gels, you know. I like to do my own little mood lighting. I think it really adds something nice, you know, because it adds that psychedelic element. You know, anyone who's had either smoked a little too much, or maybe you've had some LSD or some mushrooms, you do kind of get this color separation. It's almost like the mix separates into its separate elements a little bit. So I thought it was great. And, you know, Wheatley's a real master of that. You know, you talk about the assault, you know, the visual assault. I felt that way in with a field in England. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought that I was going to, you know, trip out and end up in an alternate dimension or something. There was so much crazy stuff going on in that one. And in this one, he takes a different approach. But it's still equally intense, you know, and I just loved it. Yeah. Brave, bold filmmaking, colors, colorful, awesome. All good.
Yeah. And especially mixed with the soundtrack, which is by Clint Mansell, who, you know, mm-hmm. is very known for his stuff like Requiem for a Dream and Black mm-hmm. Swan. So, yeah, it marries very well with that soundtrack. Yeah. So would you recommend In the Earth?
Yeah, I would recommend In the Earth to fans of, you know, bold, creative, surreal filmmaking. In the Earth has almost an art house element. I think if you're a fan of art house horror, you will eat it up. Horror fans looking for a more traditional, you know, Blair Witch type experience, or, you know, a cabin in the woods, you know, pandemic virusy sort of thing, might not find what they're looking for. But I would absolutely recommend it. Wheatley is an important filmmaker of our era, and just about everything he does is worthy of our attention. Mm-hmm. In the Earth is great. As an example of, you know, the subgenre we're talking about, and also as something that came out during the pandemic. Like I said, you know, I think that, you know, we'll really scrutinize the films that came out 2019 through 2022 as, you know, being unique and affecting us in a unique way because of, you know, sort of a global consciousness, you know, so I would definitely recommend checking it out. If you're a horror fan who really wants to know or wants to see an example of cinema reflecting a current time and a current vibe, I don't know, that kind of got into the weeds, but the movie itself kind of gets into the weeds. So, exactly. I mean, I don't want to say that I have a disclaimer, it's not for everyone. Mm. But would I recommend it? Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah, I am a massive fan of Ben Wheatley. He is the director that probably ignited a new kind of found love for folk horror with Kill List.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I completely agree with you. I think he's one of the most important directors around at the time, at this time. Not sure about The Meg 2. I'm not sure how I'll be interested to see what he does with that. I guess.
I'll watch anything he makes, you know, but yeah, that's a little bit of a departure.
But sure, look, listen, I'll watch it regardless. I haven't even seen the first Meg, but you know what? If it's Ben Wheatley, I'll watch it. So yeah, I definitely would watch it as well for, you know, fans of Reese Shearsmith as well. He's very Shearsmith in this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's great. So out of the two films, though, if you had to pick one, which one would you pick?
I think I would pick A Dark Song. Okay. You know, they both are difficult films in that they aren't something you would sit down to with a bucket of popcorn. It's something you kind of want to sit down with a deliberateness. Ultimately, though, I think that A Dark Song will either get you with its creepiness or its emotional, the emotional bond it creates. In the Earth, it is a wild ride that might alienate people who aren't receptive to the art house sensibilities.
Yeah, yeah. Me, it's pretty much like asking me to choose between my favorite children.
I know.
I love these both, but I think for the importance of its themes, I'm gonna go with A Dark Song as well. I think it's quite an important film, especially because a lot of recent horror has really explored grief.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it was kind of looking at another side of grief. I just think the leads are amazing and they really tap into something. And yeah, I'm going with A Dark Song. Quick question. What do you think is the future for British folk horror, or just folk horror as a whole?
Yeah, I'm really not sure. You know, I think the kind of the equivalent in America is this rural gothic that you see pop up from time to time. Children of the Corn might be the best example of like American folk horror. You know, being an American in California, I really don't know what the future of British folk horror is. I do know I have some friends in Scotland at Hex Studios who are doing some really great things with gothic and folk horror. They made the film Lord of Tears. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No, I haven't.
The Owl Man. So I think that you might be interested in checking them out.
Yeah, definitely.
Hex Media, because they are, you know, it's not British, but it's, you know, part of the UK there. And it might be an example of what's going on in the general geography.
Yeah, I would be interested to see. I mean, obviously, Britain at the moment, like a lot of countries, I guess, is going through a very big political moment in their history, what with Brexit, as well as a strong kind of unrest in the country. So I would be very interested to see if this is reflected, which it does, because horror is a reflection of society. I'd be very interested to see how this is reflected in its folk horror, and whether we're going to see these elements kind of play into future folk horror films.
Yeah, is Hammer still putting out movies over there? Are they still?
I have not a clue. I think, you know, it's so funny. Like, I think the last Hammer film that I remember was like Wakewood, and that was probably 20 years ago at this point.
It would have been a good film for us to have talked about on this episode, actually. I think it's more quintessentially folk horror than either of the films we talked about. So yeah, just kind of wondering if Hammer is still doing anything, because, you know, they seem to really know that playbook very well.
The last film, it says, was The Lodge. I don't know if you saw that. That was the last Hammer. And then before that, it was the sequel to Woman in Black. Yeah. I liked the first Woman in Black. That was pure Hammer. I was very...
You know, the only complaint I have, and it's almost an unfortunate complaint, because Daniel Radcliffe was so good. He was a kid, and you're asking him to play an adult...
With a child.
...widower? I mean, come on, man. I mean, it just couldn't shake the school play vibe for me.
Yes.
Because he was too young to play a mature role like that. Not that he didn't do 100%, but he didn't have the emotional maturity just from having lived life long enough, in my opinion. Look at me going way off topic. We're not talking about...
So before we go, I always ask my new guests, what is your favorite horror film?
You know, I do get asked this question a lot, you know, since I've started doing podcast appearances and stuff. And what I always come back to is The Mist. Frank Darabont's The Mist just feels like a perfect horror movie to me. And, you know, again, it's bold and it's brave. The ending is something you will never forget. And, you know, I like that it's controversial. But that one just, it always comes back to me that every time I watch it, I kind of, you know, have to admit that the, you know, the little pterodactyl thingies look less and less scary every time. I mean, it's coming up on what, 17, 16 years old now. So not everything's going to hold up,
Yeah.
But that's so insignificant compared to what's really important about that film.
Yeah.
It's just such a masterclass in suspense, in characterizations. And I love the ending, not just for its brutality, but for Melissa McBride's character who pops up in it on the way through. I don't know how familiar you are with the film, but you know, she's the woman in the supermarket who no one will help go home and check on her children. Mm-hmm. And we actually see her in one of the buses going by at the very end with her children. So she actually survived intact, whereas the main characters had a much different experience. Anyway, long story short, I love The Mist. I think it's a fantastic film.
I've never seen The Mist. It's like one of those films that's on my to-watch list. I know.
Here you are.
But funnily enough, I've seen the TV show.
Forget the TV show. The TV show is an atrocity. They made it about ghosts? The Mist wasn't about ghosts? Oh, man, do me a favor. You know, maybe tonight's already gotten a little late. Set an hour and 45 minutes aside and please watch The Mist as soon as possible and let me know what you think.
I'll do it for you, Josh.
Do it.
Thank you so much for coming on then. Where can people find you on social media?
Twitter at Josh_Millican, MILLICAN. I have a YouTube channel where I do goofy little videos every day where I decide to talk about a little film in my own special way. Just search for Joshua Millican, spell my name out full. You know, I'm the only Joshua Millican that actually has videos on YouTube. Pretty easy to find. And yeah, follow me there. And I've got links to all my books, the ones that you can find now and the ones that are coming out. And yeah, I love interacting with followers and talking to cool folks about horror. So come on, let's be friends.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I had a blast.
So that was my chat there with Josh Millican about British-ish folk horror. And we talked about 2016's A Dark Song, directed by Liam Gavin. And we also talked about 2021's Ben Wheatley directed In the Earth. Let me know, what did you think of this week's episode? Are you a fan of British and Irish? I'm going to add on Irish there. British and Irish folk horror. Are you more 1970s kind of classic folk horror, or are you like me and you're kind of really coming around to modern, the new wave of folk horror? Let us know on Twitter at @what_scream, Instagram at @whatascream, and don't forget to rate, review, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you are listening to us on. Josh as well has just recently released his new novel. It is called Septum, and you can find where to buy it on his Twitter, as he mentioned in the conversation. Thank you so much for listening, and don't forget to stay horrific. Goodbye.